been here forever. Every Wednesday we try to have a good speaker. Sometimes they come back for more and are forgiving, like tonight's speaker, Dr. David Murphy, who's spoken here on environmental and on financial and on legal subjects, because he's very versatile and he's come back again after, I think it must be about a year now. Now I just want to say the Open Forum is no connection with the Humanist Society of New South Wales, no opinions expressed. At the forum have any connection to the Humanist Society, no opinions expressed at the forum. Necessarily I have any connection to the management of the forum. The forum takes no responsibility but welcomes all opinions without fear or favour. Having said that, David Murphy's topic tonight, a unique opportunity for you, your friends, workmates and colleagues to have debts, loans and mortgages legally paid out for 20% down, etc. And it is a fascinating subject. We've never had that before. And therefore, I'd like you to welcome back, after many moons, David Murphy.
Thank you. I'll start out by saying the Open Forum program is now up on the internet. If you would like to get it, write down that website address, scwl.org, openforum.pdf. So that'll be up there each week, so you can see it on your mobile phone and you can see it on your computer, the address. It's a PDF, so do that. What I'm talking about tonight, we have a website, aussiebailout.org or aussiedebtbailout.org. So that's something you can look up. Tonight is a story of intrigue and mystery as well too. It's not just a dry talk on finance and how to pay out debts, loans and mortgages, bills, tax and other things for 20% of the outstanding balance, but I'll give you the background history to it. Now, this is a story about something that happens. It's something you probably, almost definitely have never heard about before. It's just something that happens. Now, I don't know if you've ever had a court case, if you've ever been a plaintiff in a court case, and you've maybe engaged a lawyer to sue another party, like I did at the age of 10 when we sued Strathfield Council. Strathfield Council had allowed a park, a local park, Bressington Park, over the years to turn into a garbage dump, and were allowing the residents of the ratepayers and the residents of Strathfield to dump their garbage in the park. And they were even allowing chemical companies to come along and dump chemicals in the park. And this is Homebush Bay. You've heard about Homebush Bay, an area where there was chemical pollution. So Bressington Park attracted its fair share of chemical effluent being dumped in the park. And they were real bright sparks because the chemical effluent was combusting under the ground and burning. So the park was on fire under the ground. Little boys like me would go over there in the school holidays to scab around the local park to look for tennis balls and things, fall in and get burnt, which led to 7 weeks and one day in hospital back in 1963. So we sued, my parents got stuck with this big hospital bill and spoke to their lawyer, and the lawyer said, well, you can take action against Strathfield Council. They claimed against the council for negligence, and we filed that on the 20th of January 1964 and started to sue for £15,000. Nothing happened much for 2 years, just dragged on. At the age of 12, it got put to me, and I was told, oh, there's been an offer to settle out of court. And I said, oh, let's settle out of court, nothing's happening. I wasn't told it was for only 30% of the original claim. Decimal currency had come in at that point, so the amount of the offer was really $9,000, not £15,000. So I was not told the amount, I just told there's an offer to settle, and we can't afford a jury, because back in 1966 you had jury trials. We don't have that now. We've got a different process of precedent, which is much more sensible. So we accepted that offer, and there was a terms of settlement. I'll do these documents. Now, I mentioned that if people go to, normally borrow money, and go to a credit provider, a bank or a financier, and borrow money, I think you've probably heard that the bank or the financier only has to have 8% under the capital adequacy ratio to lend out to people. They don't have to have 100%. People think people must have invested and saved their money with the financier and they're lending it out. They only are able to lend out, they can only have to have 8% of the money in at hand that they own. That's the capital adequacy ratio. I'll come back to that a little bit later on. The terms of settlement was on terms not to be disclosed. Now, I found all this out afterwards, later on, because I had cause to do research, but there was a terms of settlement, and in yellow it says on terms not to be disclosed. That's the first hint. The second hint was, you couldn't see it, but it was also no admission as to liability, which means they had an opportunity to fetch the money back later on. So in 1966, I settled and received money that was paid by the GAO into a bank account, the public trustee, on terms not to be disclosed. I've got a release from that from Strathfield Council in 2002. Anyway, 15 years later, Custom Credit approaches me, owned by the National Bank, to basically get my house. But it was a lease, and I sailed through that, and succeeded. In 1990, I get approached by an accountant who has a practice that he set up in Five Dock, and he comes back and he fetches back the $9,500 to evidence and engineer a breach of the terms of settlement. Because under the terms of settlement, you're not supposed to breach the terms. That means disclose the amount. He came back and disclosed the amount and fetched back the $9,500. Now you may think this is strange, you enter into a terms of settlement and then 24 years later you get approached to fetch the money back under a breach of the terms of settlement. Apparently this goes on. There are a number of permutations of how this happens, but people don't put two and two together and realise the scam that happens 24 years later was related to a court case they were in 24 years before. And you wouldn't think this happens, but it goes on. And when one understands the scam, it's all perfectly organised and legal. That they do it. They come back because you're not supposed to breach the terms of settlement by disclosing the amount not to be disclosed when you settle out of court for 30% of the original claim. So they come back to get the money back because it was no terms not to be disclosed and no admission as to liability. So, however, yes?
But why did you disclose the amount?
I didn't know. They did. Because they had found out in the pre-talk, I'd been approached at social events by a lady, Judy Joseph, for about a year or so, who used to make a beeline for me and talk about financial matters and my past and be very helpful, so it seemed, as a financial advisor. She wasn't my financial advisor. But in this pre-talk period, they'd found out I didn't know the terms. I didn't know the amount. I didn't know that they were not to be disclosed. I couldn't remember there was a settlement out of court. I didn't know what a settlement out of court was. They knew that I could not breach, so I was in an unusual situation. I couldn't breach, but the job was to get a breach of the terms of settlement. And that particular accountant, Martin Comer, came away that day with evidence that there had been a breach of the terms of settlement, because he came away with a copy of a cheque made out for $9,500, which was the amount not to be disclosed in the form of a cash cheque, which got banked into her bank account, Judy Joseph's bank account. So that was That is the evidence of a breach of the terms of settlement from 1966. But they knew I couldn't breach. So who breached? The breach is on the other side. And that's a pivotal point. The breach is on the side of who instructed Comer in the amount from 1966 that was not to be disclosed. Because he was only about 12 or 13 years old at the time in 1966. So he got told. Means there was a breach. Somewhere up his line of command, up his chain of command. I didn't breach. So they realised they had a technical problem. So the idea was to collect back the gross settlement amount of $9,000 plus $500
costs of $9,500. But they knew that I hadn't breached. So they had a strategy where, since I had amassed in the late 1980s, 10 credit cards totaling instant credit from four banks of $50,000, an idea would be to get me to make investment loans, loan investments to his clients of his practice, totaling as much as $50,000, which would be caught by the Credit Administration Act. The government, state government, had kindly brought in an act that said if you lent money as an investment through an accountant who approaches you and the amount is $20,000 or less and the interest is 14% or greater, and in 1990 interest rates were very high, and so the interest rates on the credit cards were 22%. So they said if you lend money out at that rate, you can't get it back. The borrowers get to keep the money. This was a scam in legislation that was done to catch people out. So that was to catch my father and me. My father had been the next friend that I sued through when I was a child, and to catch us both out so that we couldn't recover. But I thought, well, I can always track down these borrowers by electoral roll searches and start actions in the local court to recover the money if it comes to the worst. But I didn't know that we were in a scam. So this was a really good scam. However, they fetched back a whole lot of money off us. Now, who is they? I say it was AGC, because AGC turned out to be a major player in this, Australian Guarantee Corporation, whom you may have heard of many years ago, the Australian Guarantee Corporation. So they realised technically I hadn't breached, so something had to be done. If I had breached, I wouldn't have got what followed, which was a deed of engagement and provision. I was given a special deed with a guy who does recoveries called Jim Burns. Who's heard of Jim Burns? He acted for Alan Bond many years ago in Bond's bankruptcy. He owned a car dealership, Burns Family Cars. So I was approached by... Comer had been instructed, and Burns also was instructed. And he was an agent as well too of AGC, because in his car dealership he had sold luxury cars and they'd sell them on lease and get people into leases with AGC. He was an agent of AGC. So I was presented with this deed of engagement and provision, which meant that it was dated the 18th of June 1990. And the provision part meant that an amount of $140,000, which I later found out was the amount to which my childhood net settlement had grown to at a rate of 9.5%, which was operating from 1966 to 1990, was provisioned for, and if Burns was to default, it would grow at 40% per annum compounding thereafter. $140,000 at 40% compounding for 30 years now. Now that comes to a large amount of money.
Millions.
Yes, it's millions. It's over the millions, more than that. So I was given this deed of engagement and provision. It was to engage me for the finance company so that AGC would get me on lease and another company, Lance Finance, would get me on lease and sue me and bankrupt me so that I would never benefit from the deed, from the provision. The provision was attended also on the day of its receipt by AGC by a GTR entry on my Credit Reference Association report, indicating that as between me and AGC, AGC put it there, as between me and AGC, there was a guarantor arrangement put into place on the day they received their copy of the deed. The deed was didn't guarantee anything. The deed was not a deed of guarantee. The GTR entry refers to that which is capable of guarantee in the deed. So it guaranteed all aspects of the deed capable of guarantee. So I have a guarantee by AGC in 1990. It guarantees the interest rate of 40%, guaranteed by a former subsidiary of Westpac Bank. That's pretty good. And it guarantees $140,000, and it also guarantees all monies outstanding thereafter that accrue from then on. And there are now 15 of these reserves that have developed in 30 years. I only draw on reserves 1, 10 and 12. So, If you think about it, I have this particular reserve that's grown from this deed, from this scam, as it was, that is practiced on people, and I wasn't the one who defaulted. Burns defaulted on cue, as was his job. Very nice of him. He's got a reputation of being a collection agent and doing things, but anyway, he kindly defaulted, and that activated the rate of interest. So on the 18th of September 1990, it grew to 154,000, and it's grown through 125 quarterly rests at 10% per quarter, compounding 125 times. Now, that's more money than you could work out what to do with, and I'm not a great materialist. So I didn't understand that at the time, until by chance in 1990, I joined another group called FLAC, for Legally Abused Citizens. And they organised a guided tour of the Supreme Court, of all things. And I went on a guided tour of the Supreme Court. And when I was in the registry, I saw a sign up on the wall that said, judgments can be ordered for about $40, $45 if you've got a judgment you want to order. And I thought, well, I've seen a number of judgments. I've had this case with AGC, which developed into a case, where they didn't disclose they were the guarantor, and they didn't disclose why they had approached me in 1990. So I got a copy of, I aimed to get a copy of the judgment, got my file, and then I found the links connecting the events in 1990 with back in 1966. And thought, the whole, so I could work out a computation and do a calculation on this account that was growing, because I had a reason now to understand and make sense of it. Then I thought later on, what am I going to do with this? What do you do with it? It's an equitable entitlement, an amount that is negotiable and guaranteed by a former subsidiary of Westpac Bank. Now, this AGC later on got sold. Who knows who bought AGC? GE Capital Finance, and they renamed it GE Money. Have you heard of GE Money?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah.
That was AGC. So Westpac sold AGC to GE Capital Finance, a division of GE, and they renamed it GE Money. Then later on, GE decided to sell it off as well. And what's it now called? Latitude. Heard of Latitude? Who owns Latitude? Deutsche Bank, KKR, and Varda Partners. Now, GE has just announced that they're about to split into three parts.
At least I've heard Deutsche Bank.
Deutsche Bank.
Yeah.
Deutsche Bank. So, at the moment, the one guarantor of AGC has split off into six guarantors. So there are six guarantors to the monies outstanding under the deed. Now, I'm not a great materialist. I'm not going to buy great masses of investment properties and give a lot of work to lawyers and accountants and do something that's not social. But I thought, in about 2015, I thought, I've got to do something with it. So one thing I did was a contractual civil bet, which I did, which ended up in the Supreme Court in equity in 2015, and eventually on the 24th of February 2016, I won that and doubled my money from 4 billion to 8 billion. Then I thought, what am I going to do now? Someone's going to come back and say I abandoned the money because I'm not doing anything with this money. So I thought, what at law can I do with all of this money or some of the money to show that I have not abandoned the money? One thing at law that I should be able to do, yes?
Can I ask very quickly? I'm just losing track here a little bit. Is it money that you assume you had?
No, I know I have.
Is it money you legally have? This
It's always been mine since the 6th of June.
Is that legally recognised?
Yes, because that has been recognised by an ASIC matter recently, where on the date they put their initial submissions into the federal court, they admitted the money is available to be used for paying debts and loans. And that's what I decided to do back in 2015. Well, I've worked out a way to access it, because my problem was, how do you access money which is an equitable entitlement, negotiable, guaranteed, but how do I access it? Because it's at this stage where
it's useless.
Well, I worked out a way to do that, considering I've got guarantors there. So I thought, one thing I should be able to do with the money is pay a debt.
Yeah.
You should be able to pay a debt. That's legal tender. I didn't breach the terms of settlement. I'm not the one who defaulted under the deed. I've got a guarantee, which is now split into six directions, originally from AGC. So one thing I should be able to do is pay a debt. So I did pay some debts. I had some old credit card debts with ANZ, National, Westpac and Commonwealth Bank going back to 1997, totaling about $75,000 or so. So I used the money and paid them all off, and it worked. And I've got the documentation there from the particular ones with Commonwealth Bank and Westpac, who were able to supply me the documentation of the account before and the next month where it had all disappeared, where it had been paid off using this money. So I thought, I've got a precedent. I can pay off debts and do that. So word got around and I started helping people pay off their debts. I did that for free, for no charge, for quite a while, until a lawyer referred a client on to me and I thought, she's going to want to get paid. And I've been doing this just to get experience in paying debts and loans and mortgages for people and helping people from this very strange legal matter going back to the age of 9 when I had the accident. So it's a unique case. So she referred somebody on, so I thought, well, I'll charge 10%, and the 10% can go to her, because that'll be her fee. She didn't refer anyone else, but then along came an accountant that said, make it 15%. So it became five levels. People who refer people who refer people who refer people get recognised, and it's a word of mouth thing, rather than being advertised, it's word of mouth. So it became 15%. Then some other people came along and said, make it 25%, 35%. So they got involved. Who knows what they were saying to their people. So we have this situation where there was a referral system. Then ASIC took an interest. Now, who's heard of that?
Okay, I've heard of that.
Heard about ASIC. ASIC took an interest. And they suddenly launched and filed three big folders of documents in there. But in amongst all their documents, I found a statement that said the monies are available to pay out debts and loans. And there was another document that said the monies are available and exist and so on, but he doesn't manage them. I thought, well, who does? Of course I manage them, because there's nobody else. Of course I manage them. Is that going to be their argument? Anyway, it didn't go to trial. ASIC said they wrote this letter to me, and I wrote a letter of complaint back and made a detailed complaint. They did nothing. I complained that people I was paying the debts and loans to were being harassed by the banks because the banks wanted more of this money that accrues at 10% per quarter, because the banks and the financiers can't get it anywhere. It only comes out of the strangest of court cases, and I've got a reserve of this that grows at 10% per quarter. So they want it. So I was using it to make payments to the banks on behalf of the debtors, and the banks were grabbing the money, sitting on it, and weren't putting it in against the account of the debtor. But they were getting the money. They were asking for it again and again. So I made a couple of multiple payments to them. So ASIC decided, after 1 year after my complaint, to have an interview with me. I went in and had an interview with them, which went very well. I enjoyed it thoroughly very much. I think one of the high points was when at lunchtime came along, they said, we're going to break for lunch. I said, no, keep going. I enjoyed this. I thoroughly enjoyed the interview with ASIC. It went till about three or four in the afternoon. It all got recorded. They gave me a copy, and the highlight was the chief investigator made an apology. And that was an apology in relation to what they were building up to was a fraud against Westpac, that there was something that appeared to be a $100,000 fraud against Westpac. I put, hang on, Westpac is a guarantor. They were the owner of AGC. They're a default guarantor. If it's $100,000, it only reduces the amount for which they're a guarantor. That's no fraud, that's just a reduction of their liability. And their whole argument dissolved, and they apologised. So that was the end of that. That was back in May. But the interview was very good, because I thought, okay, let's make a few changes. They were concerned that I was paying debts without a licence. Did you know you needed a licence to pay your electricity bill or your gas bill? Of course not. But they were saying, you're giving legal advice without a licence.
said, no, I'm paying debts without a license. Paying debts is not legal advice. Legal advice is not paying debts. It'd be a wonderful world if it was, because then you wouldn't have to pay your debts. You'd just get legal advice and your debts paid. So I don't think that makes sense. So I thought, well, we'll change the whole system around. They're concerned that these people are paying out 15 or 25% and I part with 100% from the reserve and pay out people's debts because they pay me 15 or 25%. We do a swap. So it's a swap amount. We swap 15% of their or 25% of their money and I pay out 100% from this reserve that is growing at 10% per quarter. So, and we know that the finance, the creditor gets notified of the payment by email, which is the successor to telegraphic transfer. And so everybody knows the bank gets paid and they all see it happen. They're a witness to it. So I changed it around and thought, well, let's get rid of the 15-25% as a fee, because ASIC was trying to say it's a fee. So no, this can, and I did the accounts for the 125th quarterly arrest and thought, I haven't been making inroads into this. It just keeps going up and up and up. In fact, the amount now is over $20 billion, to tell you what the figure is. At $140,000 at 40% per annum compounding, 10% per quarter for 125 quarterly arrests, past $20 billion on the 125th quarterly arrest. I wasn't making inroads into it. So, to keep everybody happy and make it more worthwhile for the people who help other people, I've decided instead of paying out 100%, I'll make it 400%. So, if somebody's got a debt of $100,000, then they have an option. They can pay me 20%, not 15 or 25, I make it 20%, but it's an option. They can do that, or they can pay a bond, which they get back in 6 months. And this bond is 30%. They can pay a bond, but it's refundable. They can get that back. Or they can use their lawyer, and their lawyer does their paperwork and does everything for them. And then it's only, I think it's 10 or 15%, okay? I think it's 15%. They use their lawyer or 10%, it's less if they use their lawyer. Or they can do a protective caveat, which they give me a caveat over a property, which means their creditor can't take their property. It puts a stop to it because the creditor's got to deal with me and they won't get anywhere with me because I know too much. I know all the ins and outs of this. So they can do a caveat and no outlay, just a caveat. Or they can refer on three people or three by three and they don't have to pay anything. So it can be free. Can be free. And people would like that. So the 400%, to explain where that goes, the first 100% now goes to the creditor. So they get paid. The first 100% goes to the creditor. The second 100% is my access to my money. So I get the second 100%. The third 100% goes to the spotter and any lawyer who's involved. So if somebody refers somebody on, you get the third 100%, which is equivalent to the amount of the debt. The fourth 100% goes to the guarantor who acts in this matter, the co-guarantor. So the co-guarantor gets the amount equivalent to the debt for their work in processing the money back into conventional static cash. The guarantor can draw upon two places. One, they can go right back to 1964 and 66, and who's responsible for this whole thing in the first place. Or they can draw upon Reserve 12, which I've established by doing something very strange when the coronavirus started happening in Sydney. Now, we started to hear about the coronavirus in Sydney in March last year. It was all on news radio and I was listening to that. And I thought, now where has this come from? This is biological warfare. Who would do this? There's no reason to invent a thing like that and patent it unless it's biological warfare. Now, if it's biological warfare and it's come to our shores, this is an act of war on Australia and other countries. Who would do that? And it's coming from China. Therefore, everything is controlled in China. China has ownership of all the patents. It's the Chinese Communist Party. So I thought, but I know how to take an eye de page lien, an international determinable, evaluative, presumptive, assumptive, general equitable lien. So I know how to do that. And I know how to do it legally. And I know how to do it on the Chinese Communist Party. So I took a lien on about the 22nd of March over the Chinese Communist Party and foreclosed at law 4 days later because we only had 4 days because it was an act of war. So you do a war lien. The war lien was taken over the Chinese Communist Party and foreclosed at law on about the 27th of March, and at law, title passed. So I can use that Reserve 12 money, which is very large, which is a lien over the Chinese Communist Party, the 95 million members, and all front organisations, because they're all owned. Because the weakness in socialism, the weakness in communism, socialism, is all the assets are concentrated at the top in the party. Therefore, they can be attached by way of an aide-de-page lien. If that is done properly, title passes, and it takes a while for the world to catch up. So, this is Reserve 12, this large amount, and that can be used. And the guarantors have access to that. Westpac, Deutsche Bank, and GE have access to that. So, that's the stage we're up to now. So, in short, debts, loans, and mortgages can be paid out for 20% or even 0% of the outstanding balance. And I think that's an offer you, people you know aren't going to get anywhere else. I do all the paperwork and all of that because I understand it all. And it's an unusual opportunity that comes out of the strangest of court cases going back 58 years. Any questions?
If you'll just give me a time to make the usual announcements and take a breather, I'll do the usual commercial.
You can do the announcements. I'm pretty well finished now, I think.
And then I'll open it up to questions.
Yes.
So just take a breather, David, if you wouldn't mind, and that'll be excellent. You'll get lots of questions. That's always a guarantee.
Questions?
Yes.
Must be some questions that would come from
something like that. You've got a reputation to live up to, and therefore we do want some questions.
I'm just sort of trying to work out how it works. I'm not sure.
How it was?
What the whole paying off the debts and whatnot. You said at 15, 20%. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Oh, okay. If a person opts to do the 20% option and they have a debt of $20,000, they pay me 20% of that, which is $4,000.
Right.
That is my access to my money, in static cash, as we call it. Cash that does not accrue. Normal money that everyone is familiar with.
So you're actually paying the debt?
I pay the money out of the reserve, $20,000.
Right. So your reserve, are you paying it out of the reserve?
I own it, because it's my legal case.
I see. So why would you be doing that?
To settle the debt, because if I don't settle the debt, I don't get the $4,000 static cash. That's how I access my money. You see, it's been through the Supreme Court to the point where the court said, you've got your money, it is your money, you can do what you like with it, but you can't come back and sue the original defendant. That's a nonsense. But you've got your money, it's your money. It took me years to realise, yeah, you're right, it is my money.
Yeah.
I can do what I like with it. I can pay people's debts. Because the court said I can do that.
Are you paying people debts? You can't access
what else would you do with it?
Oh, I see.
What else would you do with it? It's social to pay people's debts. It helps people. It's good. What's the alternative? Buy vast conglomerates of chemical companies and blocks of units and flats and all very boring stuff like that. Or people's debts and help them help people and they tell people who tell people. It all becomes very social and interesting. So I've been doing that for 4 years.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Another question.
Don't all speak at once. I couldn't handle it. Football scrums worry me.
The website is up on there if you want to read that. It's all detailed up on there with about 80 to 100 links to documents and things. It's all very detailed. It's all
very detailed.
Yes, Brian.
Could this be a form of pyramid, sir? Pyramid, sir. In other words...
No, because they don't sell.
We know what happens to this pyramid.
All companies and businesses and governments are pyramids. All governments, businesses and companies are pyramids. If they've got more than three people. But the pyramid is where people are putting money into it. I'm just accessing my money. And they're getting more coming back from that. So it's not unlawful under the consumer, any consumer legislation. You can do that.
Well,
it's not illegal.
Sorry, I've forgotten your name, sorry.
Ben.
Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Isn't the referral business kind of pyramidish?
No. A lot of businesses work on a referral. Word of mouth. It's been around for thousands of years. Otherwise, one advertises,
but
and that's
there's financial
useless.
Benefit for giving a referral, isn't there?
There can be. There's nothing illegal about that. If the person's getting value and there's a money-back guarantee on results, I have a money-back guarantee on what I do. So there's no problem.
You're not living up to your reputation here, which is that I have to fight them off with a baseball bat. It's not happening tonight. I think you're...
It's almost inhuman. It sounds so good.
Well, what they do is inhuman in following people up 24 years later after they settled out of court to come and get their property back with interest of 9.5% over 24 years. Because that's what they came back to get using the device of the Credit Administration Act of 1984 to make illegal the investment loans raised by a local accountant for his clients so they could keep the money and it moves on to AGC. So we were scammed of about $800,000 altogether in this exercise back in 1990-1991. However, it took 9 years to work out that I was not the one who breached the terms of settlement and it was related back to my childhood matter. Now this probably goes on with a lot of people, but they don't put two and two together and realise the scam that they got approached with had something to do with a settlement out of court many decades ago. Mine would not be the only one. These people who approached me were not beginners. They were very practiced. They knew what they were doing. They were experienced. So they must have been doing a bunch of these. But I worked out, found out from my Supreme Court file in 1999 that it was connected back to my childhood case in 1966. So it led to this reserve, which grows under the provision in the deed, which I have to do something with. And why not make out debts? Pay out debts, loans and mortgages for people who would like to benefit from something like that. And that way is how I access my money, by that practical means. Nothing wrong with that. I'm entitled to access my money. And that's the way I do it.
Hang on, Brian, before you get the lion's share, and I'm quite happy to give you the lion's share, is there anybody else desperate to get in there? Okay, Brian, this is your night. This is your night.
I'm not far from it, but there's some little things going through my mind. Something like dead letters, or dead letter law, or something like that. I mean, that just no longer applies.
There's no dead letters in this.
Yeah. It just sounds like what you're doing or trying to do, just died a long time ago.
No,
I don't know.
Money's still accruing. We've just had the 125th quarterly rest on the 18th of September. There's no dead letters.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to write letters. We do emails.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make it. Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not interested in the situation, frankly, but I just try to get some kind of conversation going. Yeah.
Nobody's got any more questions?
Please, somebody.
Nobody,
by God, wow.
I plan to come back and give another talk on post-Glasgow climate warming developments, global warming developments that you probably haven't heard about. I'm pretty sure you haven't.
Yeah.
But there is something going on. And I plan to come back and give a talk about that, probably about the end of January, February, on global warming. And you will be very surprised at something that is going on at the moment.
We'd like you to do that because we don't want this man next week to have the last word.
No, you won't have the last word.
Although he will have the last word next week, but then you'll come back.
But he does know that something else is happening at the moment.
But you'll no doubt be here next week to be able to challenge him, won't you?
No, I don't plan to be because it's still in process. It's not concluded yet. I'm not going to come and tell him or challenge him or anything. I'll let him go on and... Once a process has concluded, it's a legal process that's going on, and once that's concluded, I'll give a talk on it.
I'm talking about the talk next week about climate change and stuff.
I don't know what he's going to say. He'll probably say conventional stuff or something.
Okay, well, we won't talk about climate tonight because that's next week, I guarantee you. You're going to.
So we'll finish off there.
No, but just before we finish off, Is there anybody else? Is there anybody else? Nobody. Wow. It's a world record, I tell you. How did you do it? How did you do it? Going to have an early supper and a good one. 8:43.
Remember, ASIC weren't able to find anything wrong.
Now.
I feel terrible that I don't have any debts. I would call you straight to get rid of my debts, but I don't have any.
Can't you, the lucky one?
You may know someone, so.
Yes.
Okay, I learned.
I know someone.
We don't have
you do know somebody, but they're not here. Now, I learned to fascinate. Are you.
If you know somebody and you just want to see how it goes and get your hand in there and feel how it goes and they tell you what happens and so on and you hear what they have to say, just refer them on if you like. I'm happy to meet for coffee.
Yeah.
Do all of that. You can come too.
I do have one question.
Go on.
Yeah.
Do you have to pay this 20% up front?
Yes. Because I found there's people who don't pay it afterwards. I got burnt.
If something goes wrong, you said it's going to.
But there are options where you don't pay anything, remember?
What are the options where you don't pay anything?
How the bond?
What's the bond?
The bond is 25 or 30%,
yes.
Which you get back in 6 months when I get my 100% back from the guarantors, and the spotters get their money back from the guarantors, which should happen within the 6 month period.
Right.
Or they can do the caveat, which doesn't cost them anything, or they can use their lawyer and only pay 10 or 15%. But they've got to pay their lawyer. Or they can refer three people and they don't have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
And those people can refer three people and they don't have to pay anything. That's an inverse pyramid. No money pyramid. It's legal.
Now, I wanted to tell you that I failed to meet his repayments on the furniture which he bought on hire purchase, so we'll have to dun him. We'll have to repossess his furniture. Where does he live? This fellow, he seems to have done a flit. Well, it turned out that the fellow who owed on his furniture, who they couldn't find, turned out to live in a large house in Russia at that point because he'd become the foreign minister of the early Soviet Union. His name was Leon Trotsky. And he owed on his furniture with a furniture company in New York. So you never know where your debtors have gone. You never know what becomes of them. In his case, he didn't go to Skid Row, he went up. He became foreign minister, then war minister, you know the rest of his career, until he wound up with a plastic ice pick in his skull in Mexico in 1940. But that was a different story. So he was a bad debtor. He didn't pay for his furniture, but he paid in the long run. I have found your talk utterly fascinating, David, because I am aware of how it is that people do make money out of the unwary, but you are up to that. You are on top of it. You are aware of the various schemes which are set to trap the unwary, and I think the world needs more people like you, because there's an awful lot of shonky financiers out there who will catch the unwary, and you are basically, as I see it, you're a whistleblower. You're a whistleblower of some note, because you make people aware of the nature of the jungle which is out there, which is in a money jungle. So more power to your mission to blow the whistle on shonky finance. I think that's admirable and wonderful. The fact that they've had so few questions simply means that your level of expertise is something which most of us are not conversant with.
Also, I try to follow through with what I do, and I follow through and do my own legal matters.
Yeah.
And I'm a law therapist, and I have a degree, a doctorate, from an institution to do with law.
And you have spoken here on litigation, and you've spoken on human relationships, and you've spoken on environmental issues. You are a very versatile speaker, and we'd like to thank you for your continuing support. Give David Murphy a hand, please. And, that's good. Well.